Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven, stay driven.
How you doing? And welcome to another episode of the Best Little Horror Podcast in Texas. We are at episode 11 today, and with me, as always, is my beautiful and lovely wife,
Jennifer.
Jennifer, lovely, lovely. All right, and tonight we'll be talking about Poltergeist 3 from 1989. Yeah, this is going to be a hard one. I'm not going to lie to you, folks. I'm really going to take off the gloves. I'm going all out on this one.
We both are. This was a bad movie.
This was a terrible movie. And we understand why, because what happened throughout the movie of personal
medical issues,
people. But we're going to go with the trailer. We're coming right back, and we will be discussing Poltergeist 3 from 1989, the final installment of a beloved series that happened in the 80s.
You want to help me make breakfast?
Yeah, I'd love to. Come on.
Okay, we got eggs, sausage, bacon.
What'll it be?
Toast-ums.
Oh, no.
I cook, you set the table.
How's Carol Ann?
I don't know.
How would you feel if some quack told you you had supernatural powers?
How do you feel deep down inside? One word.
I don't know. Well, lonely maybe.
We're back. Okay, Poltergeist 3 from 1989, directed by Gary Sherman, who also helped out with the first Poltergeist movie, as well as Part 2, you know, a recurring name, helped out with the series. But in this version, this one is starring Karen Allen, who played Lois from RoboCop. She plays Carol Ann's aunt.
Yeah, so meaning she is Diane's sister that they never
talked about.
Never talked about.
Ever. And then
this was just the movie that they were just beating the dead horse. They're just like, hey, we want to just keep the Poltergeist going on. What can we do?
What can we do? What can we do? Cast the count.
Way to her aunt.
Yeah, her aunt and uncle. Okay, yeah, there you go. But the cool news is Tom Skerritt also stars in it as her uncle, Bruce.
He cares about her more than
And he is probably the most caring guy out of everybody, every character in this movie, in part three, next to, of course, besides Zelda Rubinstein. Zelda Rubinstein is back as Tangina, and we also get to introduce to Carol Ann's cousin, played by Lara Flynn Boyle, in one of her early roles. You might remember her from Men in Black 2. She was the main alien, the main bad guy. She was also married to Jack Nicholson for a very long time. But she plays Donna. Yeah, and it's like, man, Diane, Dana, Donna. Jeez. And, of course, our favorite, Heather O'Rourke in her last performance as Carol Ann. And you can really see it. She looks very bad in this one.
Bad per se, but her cheeks are very swollen.
Very swollen.
Yeah.
The medication that they gave her, tried to cure her from this disease that she had, that she eventually succumbed to.
They thought she had Crohn's disease, which is just a digestive issue. Not really digestive issue, but it's like
an immune system, or
no, it's tummy trouble.
Okay.
It's really bad tummy trouble, basically, and so that's what they thought they were treating her for, but really it was a narrowing in her intestines.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
That way she couldn't go to the bathroom.
She couldn't. Throughout the movie, she was connected to a bag and everything. Yeah, that's why she always wore onesies. It's like, man, Carol Ann in this movie, she's like in second grade or third grade, and she's still wearing onesies.
Gorilla.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's this little like beacon spell thing.
That she has, yeah. Well, the reason why is just that in this storyline, I mean, we're going to try to go from scene to scene here, but to be honest, this is just going to be a bitch fest about this one.
It really is.
It's just really bad. Tom Skerritt was probably, like I said, the best part of this whole movie. He had the best character, best development characterization out of all of them.
Because Tom's character has already raised the daughter.
Yeah, he's already raised the daughter.
Like a young female family member.
Yeah.
So, you know, he cares about Carol Ann. I guess he sees like a little Donna in Carol Ann.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot.
Not a lot.
Because Donna's not psychic, right?
Oh, no.
Stuff didn't happen to Donna.
Exactly.
Except in this movie.
Yes. And the funny thing is, okay, in this storyline, like I said, Carol Ann goes to Chicago. She moves in with her aunt and uncle, and the aunt is the stepmom to a new, or the new wife to Tom Skerritt's character and his family. So technically, the family's already raised. It's really hard to talk about this movie because there's not much that really does happen in this movie. Reverend Kane comes back to life because she goes to a special school.
Yeah, she goes to a school for gifted kids.
For gifted children.
So basically a school for really, really smart kids. And that's what she got sent to her aunt for.
Yeah.
I think that's really stupid.
Yeah, it was just something just to get a new setting.
Like after the second movie, it was all about, like, we have to keep the family together.
And that's what it was about, unity, family. Then how come, no, let's just ship her off to another school. That makes no sense on the writers right there.
Know anything that happened to her.
No.
We're going to send her to this head shrink who doesn't know anything that happened to her.
Mm-mm.
Because, oh my gosh, this is awful.
And here's the bad part, folks. I'm going to tell you about it. The direction, the costuming, the story, everything was good, though. This was a triple-A film.
A 12-year-old Heather O'Rourke in a onesie.
That's
it. You know, I thought that was weird, but, you know, seeing that she had a colonoscopy bag on her.
Yeah.
Probably.
Uh-huh. And Tom Skerritt's role here, we're starting off now, they start off in Carol Ann is on her little phone, on her little
speaking spell,
thank you. And, you know, and then she sees this old man who's just wiping the windows. He's a window wiper, and they're, like, on top of, like, a very cushy studio apartment, like on the 50th of the...
It's like a skyscraper.
Self-contained, everything.
It's got, like, apartments in it. It's got a, what is it called? A gala?
It's got a galleria in it, a mall in it. It's got apartments in it. It's got probably a hotel in there as well. It's one of those type of places that you see, like, in downtown New York, Boston, L.A., Chicago. I know there's one in outside of Dallas at Los Colinas.
Yeah.
There's one of
Salinas.
It's one of those.
My parents actually had a roommate that used to work as a chef on the top floor of that restaurant.
Yep.
Yeah.
The executive. Yeah.
He was really, really cool.
Yeah.
His name was Gary. Hey Gary, if you're listening to this, I love you.
But as you can tell, they're going throughout the whole place, and you're showing like, okay, this is the big city, the big life. And, well, Uncle Bruce's character, played by Tom Skerritt, he's like the head of security. I work at a hotel, so I pretty much understand. He's like the head maintenance guy, head of security and everything. In other words, he's got a sweet gig. His wife works at one of the art studios inside the building itself. So I guess that's where they met. And then right here, they're trying to get to school on time and everything. And we're meeting another character here. I forget the actor's name, but it's Donna's maybe future boyfriend, love interest, played by Scott.
His name is Scott.
Scott, yeah. And the thing is this, okay.
Scott dies in this movie.
In this version of Poltergeist, yeah, it's okay, I know the spirit of Reverend Kane or the followers of Kane, they want the little angel. They want Carol Ann so they can go into the next realm. We get this. But in this part three, this is the only one that's PG-13. It could have been an R-rated. Well, we find out why. There is one F-bomb in this movie.
Yeah.
That Tom Skerritt does, and he just delivers it perfectly.
It was great.
It was awesome.
And then I looked at Seth and I was just like, is this the reason why it's rated PG-13?
Most likely, yeah.
Else happens.
Nothing happens in this movie, folks.
Nothing.
Nothing. And the reason why it's really bad is the first half of the movie. Let me go on with Reverend Kane here. First off, sorry about that. I was going on too many there. Reverend Kane, I get it. He's a malevolent spirit. He needs Carol Ann to move on because she's pure. You know, she's pure. You know, she's pure. She's innocent. And she's loved. We get that. Kind of the whole Jesus effect thing, you know. Through him, you will be saved and you will go into the kingdom. I guess this is how Carol Ann is figured to Reverend Kane. She's innocent, she's pure, she's perfect love. You can go to the other side. Anyway, the story is Kane starts killing people like a slasher in this movie. And that was not Poltergeist's intention from part one and two. Ooh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, I'm not going to lie. My wife just found Heather O'Rourke's certificate of death. Like, that's kind of.
I wanted to know for sure if she actually had a colonoscopy bag on her.
Yeah.
And it's not looking like she did. She was just on the medication for Crohn's disease.
Okay.
But it says on the night of January 31st, going into February 1st, because we all know she died February 1st.
Yeah.
But she just was claiming she didn't feel too good, crawled into bed with her parents, and then just woke up vomiting.
Uh-huh.
So her mom gave her Gatorade, which she thought would soothe her stomach. You know, that's
Gatorade.
That's
normal mom thing. Gatorade and chicken noodle soup. Yeah.
The next morning she got up and still complained about feeling bad. Her feet and her fingers were swollen blue, and her mom tried to give her some toast to eat, but she couldn't eat. She had heart failure en route.
I'm not gonna lie. My wife, when she found out about Heather O'Rourke's passing away, she took it very personally, she cried. I mean, she teared up, thinking it's the saddest thing because, in a way, my wife finally realized. No, she grew up. Now she grew up with this little girl, and I'm not gonna lie. In part three, for the scene that you do see Carol Ann in, Heather O'Rourke, she was coming blooming out as she's going to be a good actress.
She's so good.
She's getting really good.
Well spoken,
everything. It didn't sound fake, or it didn't sound like your typical spooky kid movies like they have today.
She wasn't a bad child actor.
She wasn't a bad child actor at all.
There's out there that think that their kids can do no wrong.
Yeah.
And they do everything perfectly. Your kid can't act for shit. Shut up.
But she had it going. It's like, if she would have lived, and the thing is, she was diagnosed wrong. It was a Monday detail fuck up.
It
really pisses me off.
She
could have had a simple She could have had a simple operation done, and she'd be here with us today.
Yeah.
Hopefully, seeing Carol Ann becoming a mom, maybe, and her little girl now has to deal. You know, it's like a family curse or something.
Yeah.
And who knows? You might have seen Uncle Bruce. You might have seen Diane, Carol Ann, Stephen. You might have seen Yeah.
More movies that start out with directed by Heather O'Rourke. Like, that'd be fucking
great. That'd be great. Heather O'Rourke probably could have done very well in the horror film industry, if not if she went to college, did her thing. Who knows? The whole world was her oyster. She could have done it. It would have been great.
Yeah.
Well, going on with Poltergeist 3 here, there's a lot of strange things that's going on here. There's like, it started to get cold. There's frozen everything. It's like, it's turning into...
The AC system basically.
I think this is where they got the idea for Silent Hill Shattered Memories, where you have the real world and then you have the other world, and the other world is nothing but frozen. It's nothing but cold. It's just the little differences here and there. But what's really cool about this one too, that they had some new ideas that they were working on, and they were actually really good. Like, the reflection. Everything was mirrors in this one. Theme was mirrors. And every time you're by a mirror, you would, like, the head would turn, and then slowly, and then that would be it. It'd be over with. Or maybe the Reverend Kane was in the reflection, but you didn't see it until you rewound and you watch it again. You're like, oh, my God. It did creep us out a couple of times.
Yeah.
It did. I did like that concept.
I don't like mirrors. You know how people don't like clowns, or people are like really scared of stuff?
Yeah, they're scared. Some people are phobia of clowns. Some people have phobia of the dark.
Hey, shut the fuck up.
No, it's okay. My wife is afraid of the dark and clowns and mirrors.
I can't see without my glasses.
Yeah.
And so whenever I'm just laying in the darkness, like, that's all it is, the dark surrounding me.
And look at all that Aquanet. Jeez, the 80s hair in this movie. It's 1989, mind you, so they finished this in 87 and 88 when they started filming. It's just denim and Aquanet. That's all I see, denim and Aquanet.
I like Donna's cool hat.
I do like Donna's cool hat, though. She's wearing a fedora. But anyway, the thing is, Scott now, they're all dropping all the kids off, of course. They all have a carpool.
Yeah, it's a carpool. I'm guessing it's another woman that lives in the building also.
Yeah.
Normally, it looks like Carol Ann and Donna hitch a ride with these people, but previously, before they missed the ride, they had to, like,
they had to rush out.
There's a whole
cute
little scene of just seeing Heather O'Rourke just talking.
Just talking, and like I said, she was doing great. Oh, man, it's really hard to see this one, because half the movie, there's, like, Carol Ann scene. Of course, she's the main character, Heather O'Rourke. And then the second part of this movie,
none.
You do not see her. All you see is Tom Skerritt and Karen Allen. And the reason why is she did. She passed away in the middle of filming this. Mm-hmm. So they had more than half the project done. They just had to keep going with it. So they used her stunt double to be Carol Ann.
Yeah.
Rather than a reflection. So, and it was performed by, I do believe, a small person. Or
It was a child,
you think? Okay.
It was another child.
It's just, and now we meet this new, okay, like we said, she's going to this new school here that's for the gifted. It's very Charles Xavier's type of school.
Yeah,
it feels really nice. Minus the special effects and mutants and all that, but that type of setting, that type of school, you know, a very, like a,
a
manor, like a Bruce Wayne manor, a very nice, very, you know, like, nice school and everything, and Carol Ann is just staring
at this mirror. It's a two-way mirror.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And the people on the other side of this mirror feel like she's staring right at them, right? But what she is staring at is just...
Yeah. Oh, and we're introduced to the dean, who's also the head shrink psychologist here.
Is he the dean? I didn't think he was the dean. I just thought he was head psych.
But normally, I guess that would be it. I don't know about these schools. I mean, you don't see a principal. You don't see an assistant principal or anything like that.
What would the principal be doing in this storyline?
Exactly. So I would, So the head shrink of their department, his name is Richard Fire.
Played by Fuckboy O'Malley.
My wife, we do not like this character. And his name is Dr. Satan. Almost sounds like Satan. Yes, this isn't a Rob Zombie film, but Dr. Satan. Anyway. He is the reason why Reverend Kane finds Carol Ann again. He has sessions with her, goes into a self-hypnosis, so she could remember what happened. You know, like, and you see flashbacks of part one and two in black and white of her memory, of her, you know, going through the TV, let's see, coming out, Diane Sather, part one, and then part two, when all four of them and Taylor are fighting, you know, Reverend Kane. And it's because of him. Apparently, he was lost. He was gone. Reverend Kane could not find Carol Ann. In other words, we won. The good guys won. It was over with. But he opens up that sixth door, and you know how kids are when they have this gift. They're very sensitive. They're very vulnerable when it comes to the other side, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, and Reverend Kane, he's like in reflections. He's seeing her. She's trying to, you know, shake it off, ignore the fact, like, no, he's been gone. He's gone. He's not here anymore. We took care of him. You know, he's moved on. And, of course, he's like waving at her, saying, you know, my little angel, my perfect angel.
Yeah, so
obsessed.
You want the angel,
stuff like that, like he did in part two, pretty much. Anyway, now what they're saying is Dr. Satan is now talking to the other, I guess you would say, the other doctors and stuff there, or the other head shrinkers about Carol Ann. She is a special case. She makes people into mass hypnosis where they think they saw, the house blow up, or it got sucked in, or cars were blown up, or there's just fire everywhere.
It's just unexplained.
It's so full of shit.
And then a scene with Tangina.
Oh, yeah, Tangina.
Out of nowhere.
Next scene, Tangina. You're right. Go ahead, sweetie.
Yeah, so anyway, Reverend Kane finds Carol Ann,
finally, yeah.
And Tangina's out to tea with one of her friends. And she just pours her tea, and she zones out, and her tea starts spilling over. And she's just like, He's found her. I have to go.
Oh.
You finish your tea. I have to go.
It was so awesome. When you see Tangina come back, it's like, she looks like your typical, you know, like Pentecostal Southern, you know, like, you know, God, you know, like, but really, like, really one of those nice church ladies, not one of those fake ones that we see a lot in today's society.
Yeah,
it's like they were having brunch.
Every Sunday. Can I see your manager?
Exactly. But it looks like she was having her Sunday brunch with her tea, with her little ladies. It looks like she belonged in the Red Hat Club.
Yeah.
With those Red Hat ladies, you know, And of course, she touches her necklace. And this is something new. It's all turquoise, and it looks very Native American. And of course, later on, it tells you, Taylor.
Yeah, it turns out Taylor had given that necklace to her.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case.
Uh-huh.
And Taylor, it seems, in this movie, has passed away.
Yeah. Sam Sampson, the one who played Taylor in part two, and he also played Chief in
One Flew Over the
Cuckoo's Nest. Thanks, sweetie. He passed away. He died of cancer 2 years prior to this movie. Like I said, Poltergeist 2 was his last movie. So once again, that's another, as they call it, the Poltergeist curse, with so many things that happened. But he was already diagnosed with it before he even joined the project. So,
if they didn't use real dead bodies, maybe something wouldn't have happened.
No, it can't happen. It can't work that way. Taylor, what do you call it? Sam's Native American. He would win.
No, but I'm saying, like, if they hadn't used real dead bodies.
Oh, real dead bodies in part one?
The curse.
So anyway, now they're doing a session where she's trying to remember and trying to see, and
he has her under hypnosis.
Under hypnosis.
And screaming.
She's crying. She's screaming. She wants mom. She misses mom and dad. I can't find you. You know, she's saying scenes from part one.
Yeah, and if you guys remember, it looks like
the other side.
The other side was really
hellish, organic.
Organic. Just gross.
It was just gross. It was wet. It was. I hate to say those words, but it's true. It was wet. It was moist. It was organic. It was gross. It looked like an H.R. Geiger, except with flesh colored instead of normally black and white and gray.
Yeah, baby.
And bony. So, but in this version, it goes into cold. That made no sense whatsoever.
It was some sort of really, really cold place.
I guess Dante's Inferno. Is it the ice hell? Maybe, I don't know. They never explained to it why.
Yeah.
Like I said, there was a lot of openings and there was a lot of plot holes in this movie. They just had to get a project going. Like I'm not gonna lie to you folks. Oh, the first half of this movie had some promise.
Yeah, it did.
It had some promise.
But obviously,
just the second half, it just It fell apart. They should have just, when stuff like this happens even today, they have insurance on movies and they just keep it on a shelf for a while and they'll like release it on Blu-ray or DVD for the die-hard fans.
Yeah.
And that's what they should have done with this one.
Yeah, no, they went and like released one. They finished this one and released it in theaters.
And it did not do well at all.
No, of course not, because I'm sure like before it even came out, people were hearing that Carol Ann's dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And another award from it said,
we're
going
to go see this last movie. And then whenever they see it, it's like a fucking abomination.
Most likely, the opening weekend was probably its only time it made money. And then after that, when word around, because remember, this is 89, it's before internet and social media and Rotten Tomatoes, it was gone. And it's really sad, too, because here's a scene that they're about to show right here. And this is what I liked about it when Tom Skerritt, Uncle Bruce, is talking to Carol Ann about how to make a little girl laugh and everything like that. You just find and you tickle her. Yeah. And you just tickle, you know, and just like, and she laughs. It's like, I like stuff like that because it's like, He doesn't even know this little girl at all, only what he's heard from his wife. And he's like, this is stupid. You should love her the way she is.
I hate the wife later on. I really do, because all this shit starts going down.
Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.
She starts calling Carolyn a brat. I can't wait to send her back to her parents, where it's going to be their problem.
It's going to be their problem again. And everything is normal when it was just us. Like, apparently, she didn't have the gift that Diane had and Grandma Jess had.
She didn't want the gift. Weird. She just wanted to be normal.
She wanted to be a normal person.
Normal.
Yeah, what is, exactly. So she didn't embrace it. So Carol Ann is looking outside the window. It's night. She's lonely. She probably misses
She misses Robbie.
She misses Diane, misses Steven, you know. And then, of course, they're doing a scene-to-scene, cut-to-scene of him going, good night, everyone, love you, good night, Donna, good night, get off the phone. And that's a funny thing. They do an homage to part one real quickly. Donna's on the phone.
Dana.
Yeah, Donna's on the phone talking, and Bruce is like, good night, get off the phone. And it's like, that's very Steven right there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the scene where...
I think it's the opening of her gala.
It's the opening of, yeah.
It's the opening of the wife gala.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're all getting, you know, dressed and ready. And he mentions that dress is like a payment. Like,
last year, yeah.
Is last year's income check.
Last year's like income check. Yeah, that's what it was.
Tax return.
Yeah, they got her, yeah. She's living the high life. She's out of the suburbia. She doesn't want to be, it's spooky suburbia. That's what I'll say.
Spooky
suburbia.
Who wants to live in spooky suburbia?
Who wouldn't? I would. Jeez, I'd move into that place.
Normal people.
Right. So she goes to the big city. She finds herself a sugar daddy. And he's a good guy, too. That's the thing, though. It really, really makes me mad. And the thing is, normally in these type of movies, it's always the mother instincts, you know, instincts, you know. It's always, or the internal instinct. Thank you. Maternal instinct. Save the day. And even I agree with that. That's how it should be.
Yeah,
but in this movie...
This man's paternal instinct, because he actually...
This man's paternal instinct. He has a daughter, and Tom Skerritt was the Stephen and Diane character in one person.
Sorry, mind you, this woman has never had a child.
Never.
Never had a child in her life. She probably doesn't even know that she has maternal instincts.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't want to accept them. She's just kind of...
I do like that.
Creepy scene.
Man, the mirror is off today. What happened was they're both talking, and then he puts on his tuxedo, and he goes, yeah, and the reflection doesn't walk away, and it just looks at her and then walks away later on. It's like, I think the mirror is off today, sweetie. Well, anyway, they're saying goodnight. He kisses Carol Ann goodnight. It's fun, and that's another thing right here.
Ann doesn't give a shit about
the
girl.
Uncle Bruce, Tom Skerritt, good guy, gives his girls a kiss, you know, and says, be careful, have a good night, we're going. And then Aunt Laura, right? Is that her name, Laura?
I don't even know. I think it's Laura. Aunt bitch.
Well, Carol Ann's real aunt, you know, doesn't even, just waves at her, like, have a good night, sweetie. And it's like, come on, man. What the hell?
Are you serious?
That's your fucking niece. That's your blood right there. And the in-law is acting more
This came out of your sister.
Yes.
This is yours. Like, she's yours, right?
Yeah.
They sent her to you.
To you.
Not
to Bruce.
Selleck.
Yeah. But Tom, like I said, dude, he's the best character. He goes, take the alien away. He goes Captain Dallas, and pretty much, you know, he takes authority, and he's a good guy. He loves everybody here.
Yeah.
Now, the next scene is they're walking down the hallway saying their goodbyes, and you see the reflections, and you see the doors opening on the reflections, but not in the real world. And it's like three Reverend Canes over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like,
staring at them as they walk away.
Like, okay, they're gone. I'm going to take her. You know, like, I'm going to take Carol Ann finally.
Yeah.
Well, Donna's on the phone talking about, no, I can't go to the party. There's this party they want to go to. And Carol Ann's listening in, saying,
she calls her a brat.
Calls her a little brat. Like, I'm not even related to her.
I'm not even related to her. I got to watch her.
Yeah. And then Diane.
She gets off the phone with Carol Ann, and Carol Ann's just like, if you want to go to that party, you can.
You can. I don't want to be a burden.
I'll be fine by here by myself just for a little bit. Mm-hmm. She says she knows that she's a burden. That broke my heart because. Like,
oh, man.
She feels like, if it wasn't for her, none of this stuff would be happening to her
family.
Yeah. There are, like, all these people that she knows. And it's just, it's really sad that she thinks of her.
Carol, yeah, it's just sad. Well, Donna makes up and says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you burden. I didn't mean,
yeah,
and she goes, I'd rather be best friends than a burden. And
I'd rather be best friends than a family member.
Oh, than a kind of family member, yeah. So they hug each other. They hug it out, best
mm-hmm.
friends, you know. So they forgave each, you know, she forgave her.
Yeah.
And then the next scene, we're going to the gallery, to the art gallery that's going on, the expo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I'm not going to lie. The only thing that's missing out of this scene is Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. It's that type of scene. You've got all these rich, uber-rich white people, like Reaganomics, downtown New York. Yeah, downtown New York, hip to be square. You're waiting for Paul Allen to show up, or, hey, Patrick Bateman, nice to meet you. Is that phone? Oh, my God. You know, that type of setting. All those creeps, and then what they do is they go to the bathroom, and they snort cocaine, and they're talking about who have they done or who they're about to do. Anyway, they take Aunt Laura away. And to hang out and talk to everybody. Oh, I'm going to go mingle, sweetie. You do what you got to do. And he goes, okay. And Uncle Bruce just lights up a cigarette. Because remember, back in those days, you could actually smoke in public areas.
Smoke inside.
You could smoke inside, not anymore.
Anywhere.
Ooh, yeah, that's another good one. Okay, then they cut to the next scene. Where,
next scene, Donna's in the bathroom by herself, putting on a little bit of makeup. And Carol Ann opens the door and says, oh, by the way, you look great. And Donna turns. The door's not open. She opens the door. And then Carol Ann is
right
there saying, hey, by the way, you
look
great.
It's like, okay, now the reflection is speed up a bit. So, and she kind of freaked out. And she doesn't say anything. She just walks away.
Like,
the
no
minute I saw that, I'd be like, okay, Caroline, I'm not going to lie to you, sweetie. I just saw your reflection 2 seconds before you said the exact same thing.
I'm not leaving. Without you.
I'm not leaving. Let's go. You said you know somebody.
How do you not notice these reflections?
Yes, exactly. Donna is right by the window with the reflections, and then Reverend Kane is closing each door, you know, because there's tons of them, and they're super loud to Caroline. I just don't know why Donna doesn't see it.
He doesn't want Donna to see it.
Probably so. That's probably it, because it's all Carol Ann. Because Carol Ann, that's true. Carol Ann has
a
gift.
This is Carol Ann's room. That's adorable.
Yeah. So it's just, I would, if I saw that, though, I'd be like, you said you knew somebody, like a psychic lady. Can you, like, use your Jedi power to bring her here?
Yeah, it, well, it turns out that
it happened.
Tangina, like, talks to Carol Ann through the fucking
through the mind. It's like, once again, it's like a Shining. You know, it's a telepathic. They have telepathy. They can talk to each other, or they can feel each other, you know, what to do and stuff. So they have a good psychic connection, Carol Ann and Tangina does. So Tangina is on a rush right now. She's taking the
Tangina is currently on her way.
Currently on her way right now. She's taking a red-eye flight, you know, from, wow, let's see. They're in California,
yeah,
right? All the way to Chicago. Wow, that is a long flight. How long do you think that flight is? 6-8 hours? Almost 10 hours?
No. No, because just from Texas to Colorado is probably about, I don't know, like an hour and a half.
Okay, 2 hours at the most?
Yeah, I'm going to say probably about three.
3 hours? Okay.
3 at the most. I don't know.
And it just shows you because it's like, that was quick. Like, she gets there, right there, and ready to do battle once again. I'm not going to lie, Tangina, she
sold
she,
that fight.
Oh.
Like, she's just like, if it wasn't for you, he was gone. She was safe. He could not find her.
He could not find
you
her.
You made her remember all of this stuff, and he has found her now, and he is after her. This is your fault.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, Tangina goes on a, she goes on a mama rant. She goes on an like an auntie rant. Technically,
I'm
that would be like her
shocked.
That's her true aunt. If you ask me, Tangina was a true family member.
I am almost shocked that Tangina did not call Diane and Steven on her way there, just being like, he found her.
That's another thing. I always thought about that, too. It's like, Diane, Carol Ann is in danger. He found her. And that's all you have to say. And then Steven and Diane are on their way with Tangina to go and fight this thing.
Yeah, that would have been a really good movie.
Yeah, the whole family.
So much better than this.
If not, let's see. Robbie right now, if this is 89, okay, she's, what, 10 or 12, right?
12. Robbie would be 14.
14 or 15, he'd be, yeah, just started high school.
Mm-hmm.
He could have gone, too.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And now she's looking around. She's hearing Reverend Kane's voice, right? And then she looks at the reflection, and Reverend Kane looks like Carol Ann saying, we're back. And he's holding her.
Through the mirror, rising her up.
Yeah.
And it's just,
and from this point on, it's like the other world.
Yeah.
This
is basically where shit starts hitting the fan.
Yeah, from this point on now, it's nothing but we want the precious angel. Come to us, Carol Ann. Carol Ann, come to me, you know.
Precious angel this, precious
angel that, yeah.
Sucked into the reflection world somehow. Donna and Scott get sucked up in the reflection world. Tangina touches the mirror.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Donna comes out of Tangina's body. I'm just getting this movie over with so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
I know. I agree.
This is awful.
It's just, this is how it goes. Just in case if you didn't hear that, what happened? She's right, and she's absolutely right. This movie's terrible. It's awful. It's just they had to work with what they got. What they got is what they had to work with, pretty much.
Yeah.
But okay, Reverend Kane has found Carol Ann again, and then now we have Tangina saying, "Break the mirror." You know, she's using it while she's on the plane, and then Carol Ann hears her voice, does it, she gets out,
mm-hmm.
And then from that point on, people start disappearing left and right.
Oh,
yeah.
She's on the plane and she calls the psych director.
Oh, yeah. And then the shrink director is pretty much saying, is this one of your pranks, Carol Ann? Who is this?
Yeah. Oh, and you know what the last words he says to his wife are?
Don't forget the cilantro.
I hate this guy.
This guy, if
I was his wife, I would have poisoned him a long time ago.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
That's good. This guy gets his upcomings, and he gets it. Does he get it good?
Oh, does he get it good?
He gets it really good.
I hate this man.
He gets pushed down an elevator shaft.
By evil Donna, mind you. Comes out of Tangina.
This is what happens, folks. Okay, he goes to the art gallery. He's going to scold Carol Ann in front of his aunt and uncle, and they believe him at first. Tom Skerritt kind of believes, okay, the shrink's like, come on, she's dealt with this stuff before. I understand him.
This is just massive gnosis.
This massive gnosis.
He's just really manipulative.
And then, I don't know who to believe, Tweedledee or Tweedledummer, right?
Tangina,
of course, is the other one. And then, remind you folks, Tangina's still on the plane. And then when she comes, finally shows up to save Carol Ann, she goes...
It was after she was off the plane.
Okay.
It was after.
Oh, after, okay.
It was one of those things where it was like from the first movie where... they ask Steven to ask her something, and he doesn't say anything.
He's just
like, well, if she's psychic, she would hear it. And then she comes out, and she's just like, I just wanted to hear it out loud.
He's going to hear it out loud. I don't like tricky answers. Yes. But, of course, she does her thing when she looks at Tom Skerritt, who said that, you know, before, outside, you know, Tangina was nowhere in sight, and says, well, who are you going to believe, Tweedledee or Tweedledum? And it's like, ooh. See, she's smart. She knows her business because she was not in the room when he said that. So. Mm-hmm. Now, we live by an airport, so you're probably hearing that right now. It's a jet going off. So anyway, okay. Donna and her friends decide to skip the party, go to the pool, and there's cameras everywhere, so they have to sneak behind the cameras, and now they're going to go to the grocery store that's in there, inside.
There's a grocery store
in there. This is the setting of Dawn of the Dead, for God's sake, the way this place
is. Really cool. But the thing is how they're getting away with it and how they're not getting caught is, we never mentioned this before, but Donna's dad, Uncle Bruce, is the maintenance.
Oh, I see.
He's top maintenance,
and he's head of security. He's the head guy. We kind of have something like that where I work. I work at a hotel as well. So it's like he's the main guy when it comes to fixing everything. He's like the superintendent.
He's the one that they talk to.
Yeah.
And then he's the one that says, he hears the complaint, and then he calls somebody to get it fixed.
Yeah. And he does for security purposes and for maintenance.
Yeah.
So anyway,
Donna's got keys. She's got a spare set of keys for every single door in this building, every single store in this building, every single thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's on a little tiny key ring. Keys or something.
No kidding, yeah. Carol Ann tries to call Donna. Donna's not there. Now she's on her own, trying to get from place to place, sneak attacks, I got to get out of here, but there's like reflections everywhere in this damn mirror.
She can't go into her own room. And by the way, that's a sound from, what movie did we watch?
Exorcist 3.
Yeah.
There's a sound bite from Exorcist 3 when the nurse gets her head cut off. Yeah, the one in the red sweater. Yeah.
Her name was Amy something. Started with a K.
And once again, and guess what? That links to, that's where they got the inspiration for Silent Hill.
Yep.
For that nurse, once again, just like this one.
Mm-hmm.
So everywhere Carol Ann goes, there's mirrors everywhere, and Reverend Kane is in the mirror world,
mm-hmm.
scaring her. So she can't escape. She's just running. So she goes to the fire escape.
If you open an emergency fire door and it says alarm will sound, it will. The alarm is going to go off when you open that door, and it will stay going off when the door is closed.
Yeah, that's the thing. She goes through a fire accident, and the alarm goes off, and it doesn't and stops when it closes. That doesn't work. You can't. The maintenance has to have, or security has to have the key to do it. Reset it.
This poor child is just running downstairs, just running down flights and flights and.
Oh God! This must have done hell for her body.
I have no idea. In reality.
In reality, Heather, just doing her own runs and stunts. Like,
yeah.
She must have been tired for her.
But in reality, she wasn't going down 70 flights of stairs.
No. Just story wise, yeah. She gets all the way down to the parking garage.
Basement.
The basement, yeah. And then she's on top of a puddle, and the puddle starts coming to life. And then it starts, and then the hands start trying to grab her and pull her into the other world where she was in part one.
Yeah.
Donna and Scott see it over the the cameras.
Someone gets sucked in.
Oh, Scott does, yeah. And how was it? They got to go save Carol Ann. And then Donna realizes, oh, shit, this is real. She wasn't lying, Scott gets pulled in. He's gone. Donna gets pulled in. She's gone. And then all of a sudden, Carol Ann gets pulled in, and she's gone.
Yeah.
And this is one of the last scenes that was filmed. There's two more scenes with her in it, but those were the last three. There's two more of the scenes that they filmed out of sequence because of her passing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the – after this, you really don't see Carol Ann from that point on.
And it goes into a story about Bruce and
Laura, their marriage.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Because Tangina's just like, he will try to rip you apart. You need to, like, love this and love that and all this, all the other Tangina love bullshit.
Yeah. All the hippie love, pretty much, cycle that she does. And she's right. And Bruce is willing, Tom Skerritt's character, Uncle Bruce is willing to, like, okay, we can do this. We can do this. You're right. Meanwhile, Laura's just like, oh, man, I can't stand this. This is the reason why I wanted to leave. She's been in nothing but trouble ever since day one. I always hear it from her sister. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, bitch, be gone. This isn't fun to watch. Why am I watching this now? Well, we're watching this so you folks don't have to watch it.
Yeah. See, I feel like we shouldn't have done so much research when it's going into this movie, but we already knew so much about this.
We did. So, I mean, we're just – and you're right. And as my wife said, pretty much what happened was, there's a reflection area scene where Tangina is talking. Carol Ann, can you come back to us, sweetie? Carol Ann. And she realizes, how come she's not listening? This is not Carol Ann. She gets next to a mirror with a reflection of Carol Ann.
She accidentally gets pushed onto the mirror.
Yeah, somehow. Gets pushed on the mirror. And then Reverend Kane says, Tangina, and then touches her, and she's gone.
No, she just touches the mirror, and she dies. You see,
we watched Carol Ann comes up. Well, the fake Carol Ann, comes up, and it's Reverend Kane's face, all old and everything, you know, on Carol Ann's body. But Tangina touches her, and then she turns into a bag of bones.
Yeah.
Literally,
then,
she turns into a dry bag of bones.
And then after that, like, crazy fingers come out of her dead face.
Yeah.
And screaming starts happening. Donna is screaming and comes out as a dead Tangina. And I'm like, that's fucking weird.
It was. And it's like, okay, that's probably PG-13 right there because it looked like a gore. It looked like a zombie movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awful.
It was
really stupid because it's not even a real Donna.
Yeah.
I don't even know how Evil Scott gets out of
it. Oh, Evil Scott, what happens later on? Okay, then what happens in a couple of scenes later? Donna's screaming, you know, whatever, about where's Carol Ann, you know, playing the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, they find the friends at the pool. And then they take them in, you know, they take the friends in because they're caught.
Mm-hmm.
And then he stays down there and has a cigarette. So thinking, what the hell's going on tonight? Tom's scared. You know, all this shit is going on now. It's like all at once. He's trying to put two and two together. And then the pool turns into a lake of ice. It's just ice now. And somebody pops out of it, and it's Scott.
Scott pops out of it,
and he's all, like, iced over and everything. He looks like he's been in the freezer for way too long.
Yeah.
Well, one thing leads to another. He's like, okay, what happened? Donna, Carol Ann, it's real, you know, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the people see him. He's like, where did he come from? Oh, he came from the ice. What ice? Turns around, it's just water again. And now he's no longer looking like a human popsicle. He looks like he just looks like he was been in the water, and he's drenched in his clothes are drenched in water.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I just can't get over her.
I know.
Ugh.
It's just hard to watch this. We're about to finish this one off, but the thing is, all of a sudden, the head shrink is trying to put two and two together, trying to talk to him, because remember, Tangina is gone now. One of their big guns is gone.
Mass hypnosis,
BS this. So he tries to do this hypnosis, Scott, say, okay, tell me where you are. What is going on?
I don't like the way this guy talks.
Exactly.
He's like really, really soft-spoken, and he's trying to make himself seem like he's so much smarter than you.
Yeah.
I have a doctorate degree.
Yeah, pretty much.
Who the fuck cares? Oh, detect this guy right out. I don't even care.
Yeah, and then it's just...
Take this guy out.
It just doesn't work out, and what happens, and the next thing you know, Keith sees Carol Ann in a reflection. He follows Carol Ann and goes, I'm going to stop this now. He goes to the elevator, pushes the elevator, doors open, there's an empty shaft. Donna from behind comes out of nowhere and pushes him down the elevator shaft.
Mm-hmm.
And then she starts laughing, and her voice is all digitized, like, you know, it's a low voice. It's a low voice, like a demon laugh. And then Scott looks at her, and then they both start laughing in their demon laugh. And then Scott is like, they thought we were the real they thought we were real.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out they were demons. And that's the last time you see Scott. Scott dies in this movie.
Yeah, I think that there's, like, some sort of scene that got cut out. There were a lot of scenes
that were cut out, yeah. Yeah, that was cut out.
There's no explanation of what happened to Scott.
Then towards the end of the movie, it's nothing but 30 minutes of just running, and it's up to Laura and it's up to Bruce to save him.
Yeah.
To save the two.
It's honestly really, really stupid.
And they keep talking and talking, like, we can do this. It's just Tom Skerritt saying, we can do this, sweetie. Together, you and I, we're unstoppable. I love you. Our love will save Carol Ann. Pretty much Diane and Steven, what they did. But he...
I don't want this stuff.
I can't do this. They have her. And at one point, it's like they have her. We can start over. We can do, you know, we don't need this anymore.
They have what they wanted.
They'll
leave us alone.
How fucking selfish. No kidding.
That is and your Uncle sister's
Bruce,
daughter.
Yeah, Bruce is like, really? If I was Tom Skerritt's character, Uncle Bruce, I'd be like, after I save her, we're done.
We are getting a divorce.
We're done.
We can get this marriage.
Who are you? It's like, I don't know who you are. Yeah.
Like a year after the marriage?
I think after a year, yeah. But this is...
And they've only been married for a year.
Yeah, but I would have been like, "This, we're done. You're gone. You're trash to me. How could you say that about a little girl?
About your own niece.
Your own niece. Even if it's not somebody you relate, but just to a little girl like that who's in the spirit world by herself, scared out of her mind, wants her mom and dad.
Yeah.
Up that noise. Get bent.
Bitch.
Yeah, exactly. So, just after that happens, now it's up to her. She has to, Bruce goes through a window as well, trying to go in there and save Carol Ann and Donna. He gets taken. He does the sacrifice thing, and it's up to her to save everybody.
And, of course, towards the end, she sees little Carol Ann. She's like, I love you.
Yeah, she says, she's little Carol Ann. I love you. We all love you. Please come back.
This is the part where Carol Ann, I honestly did start crying during this movie at one point, because it was the point where Heather had to say these lines.
Oh, yeah. And
obviously, she was so talented. She could get a 60-page script in an hour.
And she would get it down,
she would have it down.
She was pretty much saying, I'm a burden. You don't need me.
No one loves me.
Nobody loves me.
No one cares about me. And that's all I am is a burden to everybody that I meet. And I'm like,
And this is her last time you see her in the movie.
That's the last.
This is what you've known her for. And this is her last thing. He's like, that sucks. That hurts.
Her last line in this movie.
As for Carol Ann, just in general, it's like, oh man, you go out. She went out on a downer.
Yeah.
That really pisses me off about that. To be honest, I think they should have just two things. They should have just done can the movie, but if they had to keep going with production, do the first part over again with another actress.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, and of course, at the very end of the movie, when the credits roll up, it says dedicated to Heather O'Rourke, and it's her years, but she was born and she died. That was it. Well, anyway, yeah. Sorry.
Came out of the pool soaking wet, covered in ice, and if you guys have seen this, he's wearing a sweater, and the sweater is just
frozen
and covered in ice. And he's like T-Rexing it, basically.
Yeah, and he hits the window. And we laughed so hard seeing that scene. Like I said, she goes over there. She goes to the reflection to go into the other world. And now we're in the dark. We're in the ice world now, or the nether world. There you go. The further, as they call it in Insidious.
Mm-hmm.
And she's there. She sees Carol Ann. She sees all of them. And she doesn't know what to do. And then all of a sudden, wow. That's another, I know. They are really going today. Yeah, with all the zoomies. Yeah. We see Tangina in the reflection next to Reverend Kane. And she's like, Tangina, I have the necklace. What do I need to do to save it? I can save you. I can save us all. She goes, no, don't. This is how it has to be. This is how it has to be. I promise you. Tangina goes up to Carol Ann. Tangina goes up to Reverend Kane, holds out her hand, says, I can take you to the other side. I have the strength.
Yeah.
I have the power to take you to the other side and give you rest. So
why didn't they do that in the first place?
I have no idea.
He would have died in the
first
movie.
So Reverend Kane lets go of Carol Ann and takes Tangina's hand, and then Tangina takes her, and of course, she's the aunt's like, no, I can save it. She goes, sweetie, don't, okay? You're okay. Take care of your family. They're going to need you now more than ever. And then they both walk into the light together. And then after that, from the light, here you see Uncle Bruce holding Donna and Carol Ann. Mind you, her face is not at the camera.
And you just showed up.
Oh, yeah.
You just showed up. There's some sort of crazy stuff going on in the apartment, and the aunt is getting sucked in through the door because the fake Carol Ann arms.
Trying to grab her. She knows that's not the real Carol Ann.
Yeah, and Tangina is just like, that's not the real one. Just let her go.
You can tell she knows. Mm-mm, mm-mm. Mm-hmm. Well, Uncle.
She's just rubbing the necklace.
Oh, yeah. Uncle Bruce.
She pushed him away from her.
That's not Carol Ann. Damn you. See, and it's like Reverend Kane's like, oh man, I gotta deal with you again.
Yeah.
And every movie, buddy.
Damn you.
Yeah.
That's not Carol Ann. She just waits. She waits for all of that stuff to happen, and then
I guess she had to do it to show them, look, this is real. Carol Ann wasn't making this shit up. okay, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Shit just got real if I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I was really excited when TNT showed up.
Oh, yeah. It was like in the movie theaters. We were hooping and hollering like, yeah! And, you know, it's just, it's suddenly how they take her character out of the equation.
Yeah.
Like, she goes out so bad, like, so weak, too.
Mm-hmm.
But she does the martyr sacrifice. She sacrifices herself to give Reverend Kane peace, you know, take him to the other side so the family can be at peace now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens at the end. Uncle Bruce goes to the reflection. He's got Donna on one hand. He's got Carol Ann wrapped up. They go to the reflection, and now they're together as a family, and they hug each other. They laugh, like, ha-ha, happy ending, and it ends. Cool.
By the way, the aunt is holding Carol Ann. Carol Ann's head is, like, on her shoulder. Cannot see her face.
You cannot see her face.
Stunt double.
But, yeah. And then that's the way the movie ends, folks.
Yep,
that is your Poltergeist 3. Like I said, not much to this movie. If you're still a fan of this movie, I highly recommend it. See it because you finish off the storyline like any good, you know, excuse me, like any good fanboy or fangirl that you are of whatever you watch, you're going to watch to go see the beginning. You're going to watch to the end.
And we do greatly apologize about how we are, like, covering this movie because it's not normally how we cover it.
No.
But this is just, it was such a bullshit.
It was really bad. I'm a huge horror fanatic, and I'm very passionate about my movies, especially the older that I get. I need a good storyline. Special effects, computer generated, yeah. Jason, Freddy, Michael, I love that. That's what I grew up with. But now the older you get, you can make a great horror film, and you don't need all that stuff. You just need atmosphere. You need stories.
I can't wait for the one that's got Jim from The Office.
Oh, yeah, there's this new horror film that, speaking of atmosphere, there's this new movie that's coming out that my wife and I want to see. They're deaf and mute, or I don't know the concept.
We don't know the context of it,
yeah.
But they are all signing.
They're all sign language, yeah.
American.
And they're and it stars Jim from The Office,
mm-hmm.
and his real wife, Emily Blunt. Yeah, and...
I'm sorry. I was thinking Ryan Reynolds for a second.
Yeah.
He's married to Blake Lively.
Yeah.
And Jim married to...
Emily Blunt, yeah.
I apologize.
Hey, no worries. But they're being haunted by a monster or ghost, and they don't say anything that's doing sign language. My wife is very into sign language.
I know some American sign language.
She's trying to,
I'm currently losing my hearing in my left ear, and I would like to be able to communicate with people after I lose my hearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be a great thing.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
No, it would be great. I can't wait to do that.
I don't want
to
lose my hearing.
I don't want you to lose your hearing either. How am I going to do the podcast without you?
Oh, my God.
But as I was saying, folks, it looks really good. It's original. I like that concept. And that's what I'm talking about when it comes to movies, stuff like that. You can tell a great spooky ghost story, supernatural film, a demonic film, or just something that's eerie and disturbing without – the blood, without the gore,
mm-hmm.
without the 9-foot, 10-foot guy or stilts, and it can still be scary.
See, and we're still trying to figure out, like, who all is actually, like, deaf in that family, because I was just like, it can't be all of them. Like, if two deaf people have a kid, there's more than likely going to be a hearing child.
Yeah.
So I was thinking,
and there were scenes that Jim reacts to.
Yeah, Jim reacts to things, so I'm thinking that he can hear. Emily cannot hear. Is what I think. Emily,
oh, like she's deaf and he's mute?
Yeah. No, that she's deaf and he knows sign language.
Oh, okay.
He's hearing and she's not.
Okay,
and I think maybe one of the kids, because he also reacts to a noise, is hearing. But I think the youngest daughter is not hearing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like I said, and let's see, we're going to go on commercial break here. And like I said, from that point on, we're going to be talking about
a bunch of random stuff,
latest news, what's going on. Let's see, everything from American Horror Story,
mm-hmm.
spoilers, what's going on in the news. Is he or is he not dead? I don't know what's going on. We're going to be talking about Charlie.
Charlie.
Good old Charlie there.
Like
yeah, exactly. Is he gone? Is he not? Has he joined the force? Is he on the dark side of the force?
Oh,
is he the new Reverend Kane? We don't know. So we'll be talking to that here for a moment, and we're going to go to our sponsors.
Oh, yeah, ChrisFarleyPresents.com. Let me find that thing. You just keep talking.
Okay. Well, like I said, we'll be talking about that, and then what are the new movies that we're going to be going see besides that one? And, of course, we'll probably go into a little bit of one or two things at the moment where it's outside of horror, but still kick ass and everything. And what's going to be our future events that is going on, and our future episode that I'll be going on here soon. We might have a T-shirt, guys.
Going on.
Oh yeah. I'm talking to somebody right now. We're actually getting T-shirts.
Yeah, we gotta get a Patreon.
You gotta get a Patreon, something like that. We will do that. This will be a lot better, trust me.
All right. Commercial break, and we have a proud sponsor of Totally Driven Entertainment. He's funny, he's wacky, and he's crazy, and he's totally driven. Check out ChrisFarleyPresents.com.
That's right. It's ChrisFarleyPresents.com. Check it out, folks. We'll be right back after these commercials.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time. To the Black Mother. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFarleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause. www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your ghoul friend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
And we're back. All right. After back from a great commercial break there, I hope you guys enjoyed it. Right now, we're going to be talking about like other things besides the craptastic movie that we saw. Sweetie,
yeah.
You saw American Horror Story,
the
final episode. Spoilers.
Cole,
tell me how it went.
Evan Peters died.
Thank Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Mwah! Good night, everybody. No. Was it a good storyline? Was it your reflection on this season?
I thought that this last episode could have been done better. The way they did it was also just kind of like a playoff of just like, let's just fucking end it. Let's stop this movie because that's the part where Donna's crawling out of dead Zelda.
Out of dead Zelda. Golly, Link must be pissed.
Anyway, American Horror Story. Pretty much, Sarah Paulson's character, Allie, is now unafraid of everything. And
so she finally conquered everything.
Yeah, basically. She conquered her fear of clowns. She conquered her fear of holes. She's not scared of anything, and it's all because of Evan Peters' character, Kyle.
Wow, so Evan Peters is actually...
So he basically tortured her so bad that she just stopped being scared.
Desensitized.
She desensitized herself to it because she knew that she had to get out with her son.
Yes.
That was her thing.
And you see, that's a real mom right there.
Yeah,
that's a real person right there.
Yeah, Sarah Paulson.
Take some notes, Karen Allen from Poltergeist 3. Not Karen Allen, the actress. I'm talking about the character. Take notes.
Yeah, fuck you, Aunt Laura.
Take notes, all right?
But she's not scared anymore. So she goes and I told you in the last episode that she got Kai arrested because it was going to be like the night of 100 Tates where he was going to kill 100 pregnant women. Guys, 100 pregnant Sharon Tate. Because one of his personalities, like Kai's just like doped up on Adderall, like so much Adderall that he's naming like cult figures.
Oh, wow.
Making up all these stories. Yeah, oh yeah, he's on it. Let's see, what else happened?
So how did
he get arrested, right?
Yeah, how did he go out? How did he go out in his fashion? What was his Shakespearean death? How did he die?
A lot of his cult followers, like,
spoilers alert, guys.
Yeah, sorry. A lot of the cult followers, not Beverly, who was the reporter in the show,
mm-hmm.
and not Allie. They did not die, but a lot of the followers did get shot by SWAT, and Kai was arrested.
Gotcha.
Now, once Kai saw Allie outside, he was, you know, shouting out, "You fucking bitch! I'm gonna fucking kill you!" You know, shit like that.
Yeah.
So he gets into jail. He goes to jail. Prison, actually. And he starts the whole cult thing in the prison so he can get out and kill Allie. He is fucking one of the guards. He is fucking a lot of inmates. That's what he does. That's his thing, apparently, is that he, like, fucks them. And they love him. So, Allie, she finds the guard that he is, like, getting into this fucking weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells her that he will tell you everything you want to hear. He's going to do this and this and this. And you cannot believe any of this bullshit. And the guard is just, like, to be honest, calling him divine ruler was a big turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was great. At the end of the episode, Kai finds Allie. She's running for council. She's running for the spot in council that Kai was
that
in.
Kai, okay.
Yeah. So that's his main focus to getting out of jail is because of that. Because
okay.
He says, that's my spot. That's my chair. You know?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. He goes and he finds her during one of her conferences that she's doing. And after the conference, walks up to her, and he's just, like, threatening her and all this other
uh-huh.
stuff. And she said, you know what? There is one thing that is more dangerous than a humiliated man. She said, a nasty woman. And then he gets shot in the back of the head by that guard.
Ooh. Divine intervention kicks in, but ladies and gentlemen, they like to screw him in
up
so much that guess what happens? A woman screws him literally to the end and kills him.
Well, you know, don't think that men are better than women. We're all equal, guys. Yeah, there are some things that men can do that women can't do, like ejaculate. But, you know, women...
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
We can do things with our bodies,
hey.
Too.
Speaking of cult icons and cult leaders, well, there's rumors going around saying Charles Manson is...
No, I'm not done yet. It's leading up to cult... Coven 2. Coven Part 2.
Coven Part... Oh, yeah, that's right. Coven 2, because you said... Okay, they said they want to get... The universe is now...
Yeah, they're all tied together.
All tied together, but finally finally meeting, you know, meeting each other. Finally, this is the first one.
I think so. They did mention Lana Winters in this last season. And Lana, if you watched Asylum, was in Asylum.
Was in Asylum,
but
yeah.
She was Sarah Paulson in Asylum. So they said, I can't believe that you rejected the interview with Lana Winters. And she just kind of like looked at them. And Misty and I laughed because she is Lana Winters.
Yeah, and that was the Easter egg, I guess,
for the fans.
Yeah.
That was one of them.
That's awesome. That's cool. So I'll be looking forward to that. You're finally going to get, it's kind of like how Angel and Buffy was. You know, you finally get other characters from the same universe, and they're finally meeting each other in different aspects or different environments.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, going to Charles Manson.
Speaking of which, Charlie, Uncle Charlie. I actually have an Uncle Charlie.
Don't do that.
Okay, Charles Manson, apparently... People are saying he's gone. He's finally, he's burned. That bastard is finally dead. Other people are like, no, he's not. He's just on his deathbed. Others saying that he's in a tournament known as Mortal Kombat. No, I'm just joking. I made that third one up, but that would
There's
be really
lots
cool.
Lots of people that are just like, he's a fucking crazy man. No rips from me. You know, no RIPs from me. And then I'm just like, well, if you think about it,
He never really killed
anybody. He never killed anybody. He just kind of manipulated people into doing what he
manipulating
did.
Other people to believe in his following and his culture and his words. Wow.
Wow, that sounds,
very familiar today. Yeah. Hmm.
It's something that a lot of people go to church for.
Church for or politics, presidency.
I mean, we're now comparing Jesus to Charles Manson, but...
Yeah, exactly.
It's
the concept. Silver tongue, right? Silver spoons and all that good stuff. And yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is this. Personally, if it's his time, it's his time. All right? He's been on this planet many moons.
Very long time.
Very long time. And I'm not going to lie. When they do make it official that he has passed, there will be people rejoicing. There will people be mourning.
He does still have a following.
That's what I'm saying. And there will be people who will go to Hot Topic and buy a shirt that has it on there and say, and the millennials will be like, we love you, Charlie. It's a shame you're gone. Blue, blue, blue. Is my eye makeup bad? No? Okay. You know, these are the same people who went to go see American Satan and they thought it was a good movie.
I would look at this little 14-year-old girl in Hot Topic and just be like, would you kill an 8-month pregnant famous actress for this man? No? Then you don't love Charles Manson as much as Sadie did.
Yeah, exactly. Now, like I said, these are the same type of people right here who thought American Satan was a good movie.
Bullshit.
Oh, God. Spoilers. Fuck the devil the whole time. Hey, you fuck the devil fucks you. That's how every story should be. Let's see. Other than
that's a new Lion King movie.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. The trailers that have dropped so far right now, Incredibles 2 looks good. The reason why I say this about Incredibles 2 is, what's the baby's name?
Jack-Jack,
yeah. He's got superpowers. And the trailer's really cool. Lots of powers. He's got so much superpowers. And the reason why I talk about this is because, Poltergeist, Craig T. Nelson, the one who played Steven, the dad. Yeah, he plays Mr. Incredible, the dad.
Joe Beth Williams as the last girl,
that would have been a really cool concept.
That would have been great.
But like I said, so that's why I dropped out. It's because like, okay, cool. And of course, I'm gonna go see it. My wife's gonna go see it. We're both gonna go see it.
If anyone takes
their kids,
their little kids, to see The Incredibles 2, don't.
Don't.
Do not. Look, if you guys are parents and you do have little kids that have seen The Incredibles movie, wait a week until you see this movie because this movie is honestly not for them. It is for the kids like me who grew up with, we went to see The Incredibles in theaters when I was little. I saw this movie in theaters. I saw Shrek in theaters. I saw Peter Pan 2. I didn't see the original Peter Pan because that was like 1950.
That was in the 50s. I'm not even that old. I haven't seen that. I saw the re-release when they released it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they're re-releasing Titanic in theaters for the 20th anniversary.
Titanic. Oh, wow. I hate to say it. Spoilers. Guess what? Shit stinks. Yeah. Anywho.
How dare you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, sure. But speaking of which, James Cameron did get his rights back to the new, what do you call it, to bring back Terminator. So we're going to get to see more James Cameron, more Terminator. It's going to be great. I'm 175 years old, and I can still do it. Look.
Calm down, Arnold.
My knees. I live. Let's see what else is going on in horror news. Robert Englund has pretty much said he's called it quits. Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, they're going to redo another Freddy Krueger season. They are. They're going to reboot it again. And people are like, it should be Robert Englund. It should be Robert Englund. It's like, even Robert Englund's like, I am too old to be Freddy Krueger. I do thank you, and it was fun when I got to play him one last time, Freddy versus Jason. Oh, and another thing, for all you people out there who are all about Team Freddy, thinking Freddy beat Jason, even Robert Englund, quote-unquote, said himself, Jason won that. Freddy, no, I did not win that. I just laugh and wink because, you know, it's Freddy Krueger. I get the last laugh because I'm Mr. One-Liner. Yeah. That's just what he is. See you in your dreams. But he said, Jason, by far, is the best slasher of the 80s.
I like Michael.
Of course, my wife is pro Michael Myers, which, hey, those...
His wife has to be difficult.
No. And I totally agree with that. I wasn't really a Freddy Krueger fan growing up because I grew up...
Pedophile, wasn't he?
Yes, and people say, no, he was. He just killed children. I was like, sorry, guys, but he was.
Yeah.
So, but it's just that Jason and Michael were children. Now, here's a cool concept. I wanted to have something going on here. This was a fan film that I written a long time ago, and the concept was this. The reason why Michael, Jason, and Bubba, Thomas DeWitt, as everybody knows, is Leatherface, they were kids. They were picked on a lot, and they took their aggression out on other people. They had nightmares and stuff. My concept was, what if Freddy Krueger haunted them in their dreams, and they got so fucked up when they got older, they became who they were?
Hmm.
See, that's how you unite the universe. That would have been a good story, because Freddy one time says in part two, you're all my children. Makes sense. And when I heard that as a young boy, it's like, even then it clicked, I'm like, that makes sense now. So, story-wise, Lionsgate, did you hear that? Hey, make it a universe thing. Kane Hodder, he better be Jason. Don't get me wrong. I love Derek, and I love all the others, but Kane Hodder's Jason. He has to be. Let's see what's been also going on. They've got new downloads, new skins, new levels for Friday the 13th. I've got them. I haven't played in a while, and need to start doing that.
The Sims 4 released Cats and Dogs, and I got that.
Oh, yeah, Sir Sims.
I don't know how much money I've spent on the Sims.
No, don't worry. I'm the one who's paying for it now.
Well, no, you just paid for this one.
Yeah.
Think about it. I've paid for all of the other ones.
Oh, true. She's a diehard Sims fan, yes.
Oh.
Let's see. Oh, and here's another thing I wanted to talk about. This is horror, but also sci-fi. But I consider it horror because, you know, there's blood, there's guts, there's cussing. The Alien movies. Apparently Ridley Scott has said he's done with the Xenomorph. How can you be done with the icon that made the series?
Isn't Alien like that's the whole thing, right?
Yeah, that's the premise of the name, Alien.
Thing, right?
What is it? It's unknown. What is that? It's an alien. Cool. What about David? What about him and Android? That's known. It's not an alien. If I want to see something about robots,
What the fuck was this white xenomorph in this last movie? I didn't even watch this last movie because you were so mad. You were so, like, excited to see this. No, it's not going to be Prometheus Part 2. It's going to be continuing Aliens.
And it was Prometheus Part 2.
And I said, no, it's just going to be Prometheus Part 2, and you didn't want to believe me.
I didn't want to believe it. I had heart. The thing is this, what I'm saying here.
There's things I've been right about, and he does not want to believe me. Because,
and
one, it's either too obvious that it just
it can't be that. Yeah.
Like in the Justice League movie. I'm not going to say anything.
No, I've read spoilers, and we listen to, and we're followers of Red Letter Media. So whatever these guys are talking about, I trust those guys' judgment more than Rotten Tomatoes.
If you guys remember back whenever the trailer came out for that movie, what's his name?
Alfred.
Alfred looks over to the whatever his left or right, I don't know.
He looks over his left shoulder, and he says, they said you'd be here. Let's hope. You're not too late.
Yeah, let's just hope you're not too late. And I looked at Seth and I said, it's going to be Superman. Superman's back. And then Seth is just like, no, it can't be. It's too obvious. So I said, do you want to bet? And
so I lost the bet, and I'm taking her to Harry Potter World.
I get to go to Disney World. No, we can't go to Harry Potter World. We can't go to the Universal.
Okay, that's right. So I'm taking her to Disney World. I'm going to Disney World. I'm going to go to Star Wars Land, and I'm going to disappear for about a day and a half.
She's going to go in the dark side.
Oh, yeah. She's going to do her Sith thing, and I'm going to do my Jedi thing. It'll be great. But other than that, what we got going on is, let's see, the trailer was break down to that one. He also had, other things. With the alien thing. What really makes me mad about this thing, as I was saying, okay, how can you have the icon not in it anymore, and it's nothing but robots and about, God-fearing and all. If I wanted to see that, folks, I would just see Blade Runner, which I have. It gets great. David should be in Blade Runner. Weyland-Yutani should be in Blade Runner when it comes to the androids and synthetics and stuff about what is it to be human.
Nothing. It means nothing to be human.
It doesn't mean anything.
A bunch of feelings that you don't know what to do with.
Exactly. So, I just don't get it for those guys out there, who grew up with the Alien franchise. 1, 2, and 3 was about the Xenomorph. But I understand, you can't put another alien somewhere and people are getting picked off one by one. You're absolutely right. Let's go on a grander scale. Let's go into a scale of like maybe let's find Hive World, where they're from, instead of these fucking engineers that make no sense whatsoever. I mean, that's what I wanted to see, the space jockey, and that was cool and everything. But when you try to make half the movie Prometheus 2, and then the other half into an own finally we're on the ship. There's an alien. Oh, we're getting killed off one by one. It's horrific. It's it's half-assed. And now he wants to take the Xeno away. You might as well make Predator movies and take the Predator out and make it as a pedophile. I don't know shit. Call the Predator. There you go. Right? No, they don't do that. You know what they do instead? They actually keep the Predator in there. Shane Black takes it over to get his own franchise again, and he's making Predator with Thomas Jane from who's the Punisher, which is fucking badass if you ask me. Key's in it, mm-hmm. and he's going to be like, I say probably the smart ass like Bill Paxton type guy with the one liners and the funny things, and he's going to be like the ultimate badass of the group. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see that. And the Predators are teaming up. I love the concept. The Predators are teaming up with the humans to fight something that's more lethal than the Predator, which is kind of a cool concept. I like that. Cause my enemy's enemy is my friend. And this might lead us up to, like, an AVP type of universe. It's Alien versus Predator. That's why it's a little bit, more dangerous. And I can't wait. Let's see. What else? I have here on my notes that was going on.
Sorry, my sister-in-law and I are speaking sideways.
Yeah, and it's really throwing me off here. let's see what else that I was trying to do. Yes. Another thing that I hear that they are trying to talk about bringing back the Friday the 13th again.
Yeah.
They want to. This I agree with. They want to make it a found footage.
Oh.
How cool is the concept? You're out in the woods, kind of like Blair Witch, except you don't see the witch and all that. You don't see a Slender Man ripoff. It's Jason Voorhees. Okay, and that's how it should be. You're out in the woods. It's camp counselors and all this stuff. They're making their movies. Hey, we're here at camp, and then. Run, it's Jason. That's how I would see it.
What's that over in the woods? What's that creepy man doing over there? Why is he staring at
me? Yeah, exactly. Why is there Goldie here? Well, one thing leads to another, and it's Kane. It's our favorite. And it's our favorite. It's Kane Hodder. No, not Jackie Chan, sweetie. It's Kane Hodder. Yeah, it's Kane Hodder. It's Jason. Now, Jackie Chan could come and save the day. That'd be a cool concept, too. But, just like in The Foreigner, exactly. But I hope they would do that. If they're going to reboot everything, let's do that. Sorry for going on an anger rant there. It's just, I'm really passionate when it comes to my movies, when it comes to my franchises. I mean, look at Star Trek and look at Star Wars. You don't see them doing it. No, they realize, okay, the green screen and the Gungans thing didn't work. Let's go back to reality.
Did you know that after this trilogy with Star Wars is over, there's going to be another one?
Yeah, they said they're already talking about another Star Wars film.
When are they going to stop?
Well, the way I see it is this. It's Disney. They'll never stop. Heck, Disney's on its right on its way of buying the Fox studio, the Fox rights. Ryan Reynolds doesn't want that, of course, but the thing is this. I kind of do, not for the Marvel purposes, because Ryan Reynolds is trying to, I guess, I say start a Kickstarter or start a Patreon and get people to go out there, give him the money to buy the rights for Deadpool so he can have Deadpool.
Yeah.
But the other concept that I am happy about is that they do buy it. Guess what? Ridley Scott, I love you. No offense. You're the reason why Alien is what it is today. So is James Cameron. So is David Fincher. But guess what? It's over with. I don't have to worry about these prequels that you made that have nothing to do with the Xeno world, the Xenoverse. Nothing. It starts over.
As I'm trying to say, what was the one movie that had Ryan in it that had was basically like an Alien prequel?
Oh, Life.
Life. Why can't we just keep going on with that?
Yeah, the one with the weird organic thing. That was more of an Alien. That was more of an Alien movie than and people say that too. Other people say that was more of an Alien movie than the other one was.
Who directed that?
I don't know, but you had Jake Gyllenhaal in it. And you had Ryan Reynolds.
Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds were in it, and they both died, didn't they?
I don't know. I didn't see it yet. But the point is, from what I hear,
I thought that was one of the ones that you had actually seen.
No, I did see stuff on it on YouTube, and then they took it off for YouTube. I didn't get to finish it, but it's like. Everyone says it, even critics, everyone, you know, reviewers saying Life was more of an Alien Covenant movie than Alien Covenant was.
It got a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, and that shows that's logistic right there, yeah.
It's better than 50%.
That's true. Well, folks, from that point on, the thing we're going to be talking about here soon also for our next movie. And which one did we say we want to do The Prowler or did we want to do The Burning?
The Prowler.
Okay, then it's set. It's official. It's in stone then, folks. For episode 12, that's right, we've gone on. We just finished our 11th one here. We are going to be doing The Prowler, 1980, and that's one of Tom Savini's best gore effects that he's ever done, next to The Burning, of course, and the first three Friday the 13th. All Friday the 13th movies, all four.
Mm-hmm. Life was directed by Daniel Espinosa and written by Rhett Reese.
Wow, Rhett Reese. Tripling on the tongue. But yes, we will be doing The Prowler. Honey, is there anything else that you want to say to our lovelies out there?
I didn't like Poltergeist 3.
You heard it first, folks. She did not like Poltergeist 3. Heather O'Rourke, we love you, sweetie. You are the best thing that happened
Rest
for the Poltergeist.
Peace,
rest in peace, baby. And I guess that's it. We're going to get out of here. We're finished, guys. I just wanted to say that thank you for listening. Thank you for giving us a chance here at the studio. Like I said, I'm very passionate about my stuff. So is my wife, to the point where we'll go off on rants just for like 5 or 6 minutes and realize, oh, wait, we got to get back to the movie. Let's get back to the movie we were talking about.
That's normally the time I pause the movie and then talk.
Yeah. Well, I got to get out of here because I got to go help out with another podcast that I got to go take care of here, and it's for the Survivor Series.
My brother and sister-in-law are here.
Hi.
We're all here. See, we're all happy. We're all here. So I'm all about Team Red. Sorry, Dallas, if you're listening, man. I know you're Team Blue, but I got to go with Team Red. Other than that, I just want to say you guys have a good night. I'll see y'all next week. And remember,
you are what
you eat.
Dark night. It's a dark night.